Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Salam. I have an appointment with the director.
Yes, yes. Come in, please.
Thank you.
You are Miss Mitra. How do you do? Thank you for coming.
How do you do?
We are making a documentary about the historical four-season bathhouse of the city of Iraq. And we need your presence in this film.
That's wonderful. So I'll get ready for the trip. The historical four-season bathhouse in the city of Iraq, the capital of Markazi province, central Iran, is considered one of the most beautiful architectural works in Iran. The four-season bath complex in Iraq is considered an architectural masterpiece for its specific ornaments, paintings, and tile work. Banai script, mosaic, and polychrome tiles are the most spectacular ornaments used in the bath structure. The tiles have craftily been used to cover the body of the complex and portray the beautiful images of human beings as well as different animals and flowers. The historical bath dates back to the Qajarid era, established by Haj Muhammad Ibrahim Khansari in Ahmad Shah's ruling period. A part of the Iraq four-season bath has turned into a museum wherein precious objects from different historical periods are displayed. The bath was registered as one of the national historical buildings of Iran, and it is considered as one of the Markazi province's tourist attractions. site of the Four Season Bath of Arak. My reason for speaking calmly is that I am actually at the location of making the documentary, and everybody is getting ready for the job. Honestly, I'm a little bit stressed. I'm camera shy. Don't know whether I could do the job very well. Pray for me. Anyway, you can't believe how beautiful this place is. Here is one of the masterpieces of Iranian architecture. Its tile work and decorations are unique. And you know why it's called Four Season? Okay, the bath is named Four Season due to the tile work of its sarbine, or changing room, which depicts the four seasons of the year: spring, summer, fall, and winter.
It's your turn.
Oh yes, I'm ready.
Three, two, one, action.
The building of the Four Season Bathhouse is one of the most beautiful architectural...
Cut. Please, slower and with more emotion.
Okay.
Three, two, one, action.
The building of the Four Season Bathhouse is one of the most beautiful architectural and tile works in Iran in recent centuries, that is considered a unique monument in Iranian architecture for its special decorations. The 1,600 square meter bathhouse consists of four baths, one for women, one for men, one for religious minorities, and a private bath. The sarbine, or the changing room, has eight pillars, a high dome, and pleasing tile work and stucco reliefs with arabesque motifs, as well as paintings of historical scenes.
Cut. Thank you. It was great.
Okay, it's time for a short break. What is interesting is that the water required for the bath was supplied by a kanat. The first floor of this building is about 3 meters lower than the street floor, so water is easily and with less loss of heat transferred to the bath. The women's locker room is one of the most beautiful parts of this building, which has an integrated dome without columns. The roof of all parts of the bathroom is arched dome. The cruciform pool is located on the floor of the locker room, which is made of black stone and is used to spray people who come out of the hot bath. The large storage tanks for water and cistern are in the middle of the building to make it easy to heat for use. Seven color tiles and mosaic tiles are the most important decorations used in the bathroom. Designed and executed very artistically, these designs have beautiful human, animal, and various plant roles and landscapes of rivers, springs, wild plants and beds on the branches. The colors used in the tiles are mostly yellow, azure, turquoise, white, green, gray, red, and orange.
Are you ready? 3, 2, 1, action!
The bathhouse became the location of the Arak Anthropology Museum and houses wax figures as well as Qajar marriage deeds, spooling equipment, copper pots, manuscripts, and embossed metal dishes.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Economic divide.
In early 2022, FTX, a crypto exchange, was valued at $32 billion and a household name. It took fewer than 8 days for Sam Bankman-Fried to go from being nicknamed the King of Crypto to his company filing for bankruptcy. Now there are speculations of not only money laundering, but the failed crypto exchange took in millions in donations for Ukraine, but allegedly rerouting the sums back to U.S. politicians. Conspiracy theory? That's what we want to find out in this edition of Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, the FTX fall, money laundering operation, millions in donations for Ukraine, crypto donations went to Kiev's war effort. That's what was reported. Next, crypto's destination. Now, it's supposed to go to Ukraine's National Bank, but some of that went to U.S. political donations. The FTX CEO donated roughly $38 million, maybe a little bit more, to the Democratic Party. And then we will take a look at FTX regulation scheme. That's right, this thing is pretty widespread, where FTX spent millions lobbying to shape crypto regulations. Now keep in mind, Democrats are responsible for overseeing the Trade Commission.
Since the war in Ukraine began in February 2022, Western nations and their politicians and billionaires began to rally behind Kiev. Apart from weapons, they began to offer donations to officials in Kiev to keep the government functioning. But it has now turned out that some of those donations were not so innocent. Notorious cryptocurrency exchange FTX and its founder Samuel Bankman-Fried has filed for bankruptcy. Its company was once valued at $32 billion, and its owner had a net worth estimated at more than $15 billion as of late October. His company began to fall apart last month. It has now emerged that his company functioned as the central clearinghouse for all crypto donations to Kiev's war effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that gets to the point that this can be a great thing for the world. I think it can also be a really messy thing. But I think that at its core, you know, we've seen millions of dollars go through, the systems we've given. I think something close to a million ourselves as well to support, humanitarian aid and growth in Ukraine. And, I think when you think about what it would take to get, to get funds both to the government there, where we do have a relationship with the Ukrainian government for raising capital for them using cryptocurrencies.
sent to Ukraine by Democratic politicians in the U.S. would see their money come back in the form of donations through FTX. More simple terms, the company was transferring money to Ukraine and then laundering money back from Ukraine to the Democratic Party. As an example, other parties, such as the Republicans, were also noted in this.
All right, time to find out what is being posted on this. As we speak, there's been a social media storm on FTX and its bankruptcy. So let's get going. First up, like we have been saying for months, the Ukraine war is nothing but a money laundering scheme funded by U.S. taxpayers. This particular view obviously seems to hit it right on. Next, how else are they supposed to get U.S. tax money back into their pockets? That's what we've been saying in this program, and we would elaborate more on that a little later. Next post, well, they would be absolutely spot on. It's a proxy war, with the only winner being the military-industrial complex. They are earning a fortune of our taxpayers' money and giving massive donations to the Democrats, DNC, through FTX and others. Next, great question, is Washington still our ally? EU accusing U.S. of profiteering from Ukraine war through sales of guns and gas and threatening trade war, as top diplomats moan Biden's green subsidies means European businesses are relocating to the U.S. What we did was we further expanded on this. As soon as the Ukraine war started, President Zelensky partnered with FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried for crypto donations. It posed this question, is this greed or is this corruption? Well, let's take a look at this a little bit further in terms of this partnering with FTX. Everstake to launch new crypto donation website. FTX is converting crypto contributions to Ukraine's war effort into fiat for deposit at the National Bank of Ukraine. The Ukrainian government launched a new crypto donations website, streamlining its multi-million dollar effort to turn Bitcoin into bullets, bandages, and other war material. Aid for Ukraine, which has the backing of crypto exchange FTX, staking platform Everstake, and Ukraine's Kuna exchange, will route donated crypto to the National Bank of Ukraine. The country's collective efforts have already raised some $48 million in cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. Other estimates are placing that amount closer to $100 million. All right, so those posts we picked because they kind of fall in line in terms of some of the things that we're assuming at this point about this fallout from FTX and, of course, the different connections it has from money laundering to U.S. political systems. But let's find out what our guests think about this. First up is Vijay Varghese. Now, he's a managing partner at Amparo & Company. It's a global liquidity provider and also market for precious metals, market maker, that is, for precious metals and digital assets. Vijay Varghese, welcome to Economic Divide. FTX was valued at $32 billion. It was a household name. And then you have this Sam Bankman-Fried becoming an official billionaire, thanks to, obviously, his secondary and more high-profile business, which was FTX. Now, the crypto exchange grew to be the second largest in the world. He was estimated to be worth $16.7 billion, but in 8 days, the firm collapsed. How could that happen in such a short amount of time?
The way it happens is this. The way FTX was structured, the way it was built, it was designed by its own inception to be something other than a quote-unquote crypto exchange. Its setup is very similar to what you find not in a stock exchange or a stock market or an actual physical crypto exchange, but something you'd see similar to an Enron. In fact, when experts have taken apart FTX's corporate layout, they've seen over 70-plus entities that we know of and possibly even more that was within its corporate structure. And you only get a structure like that if your whole design was to money launder, your whole design was to move money, steal funds, mix funds. Nothing good comes out of a structure like that. That's number one. And number two, a 28-year-old kid out of college, there's no way in hell a kid like that could come up with a structure like that. This was created for him. FTX is a creation of very, very nefarious private interests that are right here in the United States.
All right. Thank you for that. We're going to throw that point to our next guest and see what he thinks. Craig Holman is serves as Public Citizens. He's a Capitol Hill lobbyist on ethics, lobbying, and campaign finance rules. and also he's an expert on campaign finance. Craig Holman, welcome to Economic Divide. All right, now there are charges against FTX when it comes to the failed crypto exchange. That it was a money laundering operation. It took in millions of dollars, if not more, in donations for Ukraine, but allegedly it rerouted some of these sums back to U.S. politicians. That's a very severe charge. Now, in terms of the Democratic Party, the second largest donor was Sam Bankman-Fried, pouring in some roughly about $40 million into Canada's coffers in 2022 alone. Do you see that? Do you agree with that?
Well, one part of that story is true. I mean, Bankman had laundered actually even more. Personally, he gave about $40 million to Democratic lawmakers to try to avoid regulation of the industry. And then his co-conspirator, Ryan Salami, gave about $23 million in campaign contributions to Republican lawmakers. All in all, the cryptocurrency industry has, in just the last 2 years, has literally increased their amount of campaign contributions to American lawmakers by almost fivefold, you know, and that was all designed to try to prevent Congress from coming out with a strong regulatory scheme.
The InfoNews section of the program is here. That's where we take a look at some other news from around the world with an economic flavor. First up, we're going to take a look at what's called bypassing SWIFT. SWIFT is a financial system in which Russia and China have plans to bypass it. Now, these trading partners have been boosting transactions in national currencies. We've been telling you about that all along here at Economic Divide, pretty much. The Russian Deputy Prime Minister actually has said, quote, in gas contracts, we are already switching to settlements in national currencies. So there you have that aspect of it. Which is happening in rubles and in yuan, Russian ruble and then the Chinese yuan, and that's happening on a parity basis. He then added supplies of oil and oil products, as well as coal, are also being switched to payments in national currencies. Just a side note here, Russian price cap on its oil was actually approved by the EU, something that Russia has outright denied, so we have to wait and see how that's going to affect the way that transactions are happening when it comes to Russian oil. All right, next up, we're going to take a look at protests that are happening at Amazon. You've heard of Amazon, I'm sure. They have staged walkouts, and this came on Black Friday, in which it was called Black Friday Employees. And what they did, these protests happened across the globe, and they demanded Amazon to naturally pay better wages and to improve their working conditions. This has been going on for quite some time, actually. Now, these protests happened from Germany and France to the U.S., from India to Japan and the United Kingdom. Shows how vast it is, where Amazon's employees downed their tools and joined marches for that Black Friday. All right, EU gas purchases. I just mentioned the EU. And since in terms of insider EU gas purchases, the European Union has spent actually $13 billion on Russian LNG this year. Go figure. How is that possible if they're being actually sanctioned? Now, that's five times more than in 2021, in which the highest demand came from Belgium and from France. Now, the surge in LNG imports this year shows the difficulty in punishing Russia for its special military operation in Ukraine. I wonder if Belgium and France actually knew that there was going to be a cap on the Russian oil, and they were the ones who actually have spent the most buying it. Anyways, taking a look at this particular piece of news, this is very important in terms of a split between the U.S. and France. The French president has warned that subsidies paid to U.S. companies under a vast green energy plan may split the West as a whole. He further added that U.S. industrial subsidies are, quote, super aggressive against French and European competitors. Trade tensions clouded his high-profile state visit to the U.S., which he paid a visit to the U.S. just very recently.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you. We've reached a segment to the program called the In-Depth Section, where we will look at the relationship between FTX, Ukraine, the United States, and in particular, the Democratic Party, and in turn, FTX contributions. Let's first look at the timeline of events that are important in maybe answering any ambiguities there. First, in September 2021, Ukraine formally legalized crypto. Then comes February 2022. Russia's special military operation in Ukraine began. And then we're taking a look at February 26. Kuna, which is Ukraine's largest crypto exchange, receives crypto for the war in the same month. Now, this crypto exchange is what it received was called a war effort donation. Next up, we take a look at a month later from that date, in March, Kuna's collaboration with FTX began. It said that it worked with FTX to convert cryptocurrency donations into Ukraine's government-issued currency. Now, as to the amount of the money that flowed in, officially this is what was reported, close to $100 million in crypto donations. Now, the Crypto Fund for Ukraine, run by Michael Chobanyan, he's the founder of the Ukrainian crypto exchange Kuna, accounted for 60% of all the donations. In case you were wondering why crypto, because crypto donations allowed Kiev to obtain funding instantly and then deposited them in the National Bank of Ukraine. Now, FTX's connection to the U.S. political parties. FTX's CEO, Bankman-Fried, has become a major Democratic donor. FEC records showed that he made significant donations to Democratic candidates and PACs, including a $27 million donation to the Protect Our Future PAC, which supports mostly Democratic candidates. However, he has also made contributions to some Republican candidates. Now, maybe this diagram can put things into perspective, titled U.S. Tax Dollars at Work. Money came from FTX in the form of donations to the Democratic Party and PACs. The party itself will then obviously back Biden. Then Biden gives the U.S. tax dollars in the form of military and humanitarian aid to Ukraine. Then Ukraine uses the U.S. aid to partner with FTX. Now, the parts that's most concerning, all of them, frankly, but the U.S. military and humanitarian assistance. The U.S. has given billions of dollars to Ukraine. Don't forget that. And then finally, when it came to the 2022 U.S. midterms, let's take a look at who were the largest donors. Now, in this case, since our focus is on Sam Bankman-Fried, he was the number two donor. You can see over here, George Soros came in at number one at $129 million. All right, in case you didn't get that flow chart or anything that we just talked about, let me reintroduce our guest. Vijay Varghese, managing partner at Empower & Company, rejoins us to tell us what he can. Well, our question to you, first of all, welcome back. A question to you, Vijay, is the news that Ukraine accepted donations towards its military defense against Russia via digital currencies. The first question that comes to mind is, why is it accepting digital currencies in the first place? I mean, if you want to take a look at the amount of money that the U.S. is contributing to this war, it's billions of dollars. And maybe that is one of the reasons. What do you think? What is the reason for that?
Oh, yeah. It's a great question. And I'll tell you right now, if this was simply a war of attrition with Russia, and part of it is, okay, there's many layers to this whole Ukraine thing. But when you just look at why, just the question is why digital currency payments were used in Ukraine, right at the same time where the U.S. is sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, and then all of a sudden, left and right, many, many brand new Ukrainian exchanges, cryptocurrency exchanges were popping up. The answer is really simple. If you want a fast and efficient way to covertly fund various groups that are in Ukraine, and we know that the Azov Brigade, the Banderistas, the Stepan Bandera, those who follow this Nazi ideology that's so prevalent within the Ukrainian power structure, if you want to fund some of those people of the most ill repute, this is a great way to do it. It allows you to fund very quickly. It allows you to get your money, get your capital into whatever dark, nefarious project you want to get into, whatever missions you want to run. And then it also covers you from any sort of congressional oversight.
I think the key word the phrase was congressional oversight that our guest Vijay said there. Let's see what Craig Holman thinks. He serves as a public citizen's Capitol Hill lobbyist on ethics, lobbying, and campaign finance rules. Craig, welcome back. This deal with the cryptocurrencies being accepted from Ukraine, coming through anonymous donors, really, is something that is very much under question here in terms of what I'm asking you, because we don't quite understand why that is. Why is the Why is Ukraine receiving it via cryptocurrency? Why is the U.S. Actually okay with sending it that way when it's billions of dollars that we're talking about here?
Well, you know, I am not a believer in the whole cryptocurrency industry, so I would advise everyone to stay away from cryptocurrency. But what was going on, there was a cryptocurrency startup company in Ukraine called Everstake, and it was their idea to try to pull in some more money from foreign sources to help pay for the war effort. And they did pull in roughly about $60 million, according to records, to pay for the war effort. So they were just trying to come up with other means of getting investments that they could use to buy helmets and other things to, you know, to help defend themselves against Russia.
Back in March, the FTX launched crypto donation platform Aid for Ukraine. Practically, it set itself up as a central clearinghouse for all cryptocurrency donations to Kiev. But the company funneled at least some of that money back to the U.S. through political donations. Bankman-Fried was once one of the most important donors to the Democratic Party for the midterm elections. He poured nearly $38 million into candidates' campaigns in 2022.
Oh, yes. Her staffers have been talking to a lot of folks in the industry, trying to figure out what was really going on. And in fact, actually, one of them was very, very interested in the question, how did FTX get so big so fast? And those of us in the industry who were watching what was going on and frankly were appalled by some of the behavior that was taking place there, we knew what was going on. And again, a lot of this has already been reported to law enforcement and it's starting to come out. And I expect there will be more that does come out. So yes, they've been watching this and they've been on to the right questions, I think. And let's see now whether there's follow through in Washington. At this point, who knows?
In March of this year, the government of Ukraine passed a law that creates a legal framework for the cryptocurrency industry in the country. It allowed banks to open accounts for crypto companies. According to reports, the Ukrainian government had already received over $60 million in crypto donations as of March. That money has not been updated since then, and there are no reliable information about the exact amount of money Kiev has received in cryptocurrency. But the reasons for Ukraine's push towards cryptocurrency were under question, especially at a time when Kiev is already receiving huge sums of money from Western nations. Ukrainian officials have not provided any detailed and reliable reports on spending. Ukraine is said to have spent 75% of the money it raised through cryptocurrencies, but what happened to the remaining funds cannot be unambiguously explained. Critics say the lack of full-fledged reporting has cast doubts on the proper use of the service.
Bitcoin's use in military operations has been on the rise since the Ukrainian army received Bitcoin donations. According to new statistics from blockchain analytics startup Elliptic, within a 12-hour period, there was approximately $400,000 in Bitcoin contributed to Comeback Alive, a Ukrainian nonprofit group that supports the armed forces. Elliptic reported that the crypto donations reached hundreds of thousands of dollars and has been poured into Ukrainian NGOs and volunteer organizations attempting to counter Russian military operations. So, how does Bitcoin benefit from the military operations? Volunteer groups have historically supplemented the work of Ukraine's military by providing additional resources and manpower. For instance, when the former pro-Russian Ukrainian president Viktor Yanukovych was deposed in 2014, volunteers stepped up to assist protesters. In order to provide support, these groups often accept funding from private donations via bank transfers or payment applications. However, cryptocurrency such as Bitcoin has grown in popularity since it allows users to avoid financial institutions that may prohibit transfers to Ukraine. The volunteer groups and non-governmental organizations such as Comeback Alive, which has accepted cryptocurrency since 2018, have used the Bitcoin for a number of purposes. These include buying military weapons, medical supplies, training services, and drones for the Ukrainian army, as well as supporting the development of a facial recognition device intended to identify whether someone is a Russian soldier or a spy. Cryptocurrency fundraising is becoming an increasingly important component of current conflicts all around the world. One of the appeals is that the money cannot be traced to the sender. This could even include governments and their officials who may want to send funds in order to remain anonymous. This puts into question the goal of the governments, which in the case of the US could be to start a color revolution like it did in Ukraine. According to an MIT researcher, Jason Lowery, who is an astronautical engineer in the U.S. Space Force, Bitcoin can play a critical role in national security, and the U.S. should acquire Bitcoin to counter the impact of other nations potentially seeking to wean themselves off U.S. dollar reliance. Okay, that's the end of this segment of the program.
In conclusion, there are two important issues here. First, FTX being a money laundering operation, you know, moving money around in Ponzi scheme style. But the more important issue, really, there are two of them. First, using crypto money to fund a war through anonymous donors. Is that the trend now? And then to create instability in another country, maybe. Then governments using their own money, with politicians getting some of that money back in the form of payback, for example, crypto, obviously. Now, that is a very, very dangerous game on both fronts. Think about it. That does it for this edition of Economic Divide. From Mikhail Vitaly and the team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Police in Paris arrested at least 74 football fans as violence erupted in the French capital after Saturday's quarterfinal matches between France and England and Morocco and Portugal. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has covered the story and tells us more. Football fans clashed violently with police officers in Paris following Saturday's quarterfinal matches between France and England and Morocco and Portugal. Around 20,000 people took to the streets of Paris after the final whistle blew in France's 2-1 victory over England in Qatar. Although the mood was originally celebratory, clashes between fans and police officers soon turned violent, with officers spraying tear gas into the crowd and arresting at least 74 people, according to a report by Le Parisien. Video shared on social media appears to show French police kicking and beating several fans who were lying on the ground amid the chaos. Thousands of supporters had filled the famous Parisian Avenue, Champs-Élysées, soon after a match between Morocco and Portugal, chanting, waving flags, and honking their horns amid large police deployment. More fans joined them after France's win against England. According to a Reuters news agency, people smashed shop windows and fights took place between the fans and the police. Photographs from central Paris appeared to show several fires, as well as police with riot shields facing off against protesters with fireworks and flares. Local media also reported that some projectiles were thrown at police officers by angry fans. Items being hurled included large pieces of wood and stones. Police officers responded by using tear gas against some young fans, reportedly outside the famous shopping Champs-Élysées, Dior Street. According to local media, the atmosphere on the streets changed around midnight, with one of families celebrating earlier in the evening to groups of young men who began smashing shop windows and clashing with police. Several stores on the Champs-Élysées had already been boarded up in anticipation of the night's festivities. Several motorcycles were pictured on fire, and flames could also be seen on Avenue de Friedland, close to Champs-Élysées. As clashes turned increasingly heated, videos on social media appeared to show some fans being kicked and hit with batons by police officers. Shattering glass could also be heard in the background of the videos. On Friday, 9th of December, French authorities announced that more than 1,200 police officers would be mobilized in order to deal with any possible disorder in the streets. Some streets in the surrounding area were flooded with police vehicles. Paris had initially erupted with joy as crowds celebrated a famous French World Cup victory against England. Renditions of the national anthem, La Marseillaise, and Allez le Bleu could be heard across the freezing cold streets of the French capital. England's quest for World Cup glory had been brought to a heartbreaking conclusion after a vital penalty kick was missed by Harry Kane. This saw France eke out a breathless 2-1 victory in Qatar. The teams went into halftime tied at 1-1, but Les Bleus managed to claw their way in front when their all-time top scorer, Olivier Giroud, scrambled in front of Harry Maguire and guided an excellent ball from Antoine Griezmann in at the near post. For a moment, it looked as though France's lead was going to be short-lived when substitute Mason Mount was bundled to the floor in the box and was awarded a penalty. But star striker Harry Kane, having scored an assured spot kick just minutes earlier, saw his second effort soar over the crossbar, sending the three Lions crashing out of the World Cup at the quarterfinal stage. Gareth Southgate's men were clearly devastated at the final whistle, the players listing helplessly around the pitch in utter dejection while the French contingent erupted into celebrations. Gareth Southgate made a beeline for his captain Harry Kane, who looked as though he could scarcely believe the result. England's captain had sunk to his knees at the final whistle and his teammates requested television cameras to turn their focus elsewhere. Jude Bellingham, meanwhile, collapsed in the turf in tears. Gareth Southgate showed true sportsmanship in defeat by congratulating France captain Hugo Lloris, while the remainder of his players saluted and applauded the fans while holding back tears. The Euroweekly News website has also covered the same story and gives us more detail. At least 74 people have been arrested in Paris, France, following violent clashes with football fans following the World Cup matches featuring France and Morocco. Violence flared in the French capital, Paris, late on Saturday, 10th of December. According to Le Parisien, at least 74 people were arrested in the vicinity of the city's famous Champs-Élysées Boulevard. The nationalities of those detained were not specified by the publication. Around 20,000 people had gathered there in the festive atmosphere following France's victory over England in the 2022 Qatar World Cup earlier in the night. Local reports said that the detained troublemakers had been throwing projectiles and fireworks at police officers. At midnight, the police were still actively dealing with a large crowd of football fans. A special security operation aimed at fighting crime to ensure the safety of goods and people in Paris in the inner suburbs and in the public transport system had been announced in advance on Friday, 9th of December. As a result, 1,220 police officers and gendarmes were deployed from 4 p.m. in the French capital. A specific operation was also put in place on the Avenue des Champs-Élysées in order to prevent any disturbance to public order likely to be generated by supporters and to fight against all the phenomena of delinquency, specified the Prefecture of Paris Police. To avoid traffic congestion on the axis leading to the Arc de Triomphe, several access gates to Paris via the Ring Road, Porte de la Mouette, Porte Maillot, Porte de Tains, and Porte Dauphin were closed from 6:30 p.m. Patrols had also been deployed in train stations in Paris. Another night of violence is anticipated by Paris police when France play Morocco next Wednesday, 14th of December, with a place in the World Cup final at stake.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Role of Erdogan power's policies and recent bitter events in Iran is obvious. This is the part of speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on October 3, 2022, during the joint graduation ceremony for the cadets studying in the academies of the Islamic Republic of Iran's armed forces. This ceremony was held in Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam University of Officer and Police Training. Our younger generation has progressed brilliantly in all fields and arenas up until today. God willing, they will continue to do the same in the future, whether it is to defend their homeland, to preserve security, or to help the resistance front throughout the entire region. And the great movement to defend the holy shrine, both in social services and in scientific developments, as you can see, advancements in any scientific field are in fact made by the youth. They are the ones who drive this movement. Furthermore, we have seen in religious ceremonies, such as the Arba'in Walk, have millions of young Iranians traveled the path from Najaf to Karbala, and how millions more walked inside the country itself. Those who could not attend the Arba'in Walk in that spiritual environment walked in different cities inside Iran instead.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
In the fields of production and innovation, as you can see on television, our youth are bringing something new to the country's manufacturing and industrial sectors every day. Everywhere you look, you see the exceptional presence of young people there. whether it is in dealing with an epidemic, in a religious aid movement, cultural work, or in relief projects during natural disasters such as floods, earthquakes, and the like. This young person is not going to despair. This young person is not going to detach himself or herself from his or her values. This young person is an inexhaustible force on the field. And of course, the young, pious, revolutionary youth have been leaders in all these fields. This is the current situation of our young people. Well, with this point of view, if we look at your presence here, those who have gathered in the Imam Hassan Mushtaba University of Officer and Police Training, and also those who are hearing this speech in other universities, your presence and entry into the armed forces is a great asset.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The EU started out as a peace project. Some lawmakers say the bloc is becoming more authoritarian. A meeting of justice ministers on Friday heard at least €300 billion worth of Russian assets inside the EU have been frozen since March.
There are 1,359 individuals and companies on our sanctions list with assets and financial resources all over the EU. We cannot let anything slip through the net.
With even more sanctions on the way for Moscow, EU officials are now using torture analogies.
Every time that there is a need, we turn the screw further.
But at what price? The EU's energy sanctions targeting Russia are strangling the bloc's economy. Rents and mortgages are rising steadily. Young people in precarious jobs are at greatest risk.
Very, very bad. Really bad. It's like everybody knows somebody that lose a job, that lose that is their people losing houses, families losing houses.
It's quite depressing for us to think that, for example, as for me, I'm studying a degree and I'm nearly certain that I'm not going to find a job when I'm done with it.
EU social affairs ministers met here in Brussels on Friday.
Many people, many households are facing difficult moments and we should leave nobody behind.
Charities say it's already too late for many and words need to be replaced by actions. At the same time, the EU is able to send billions of euro to the Ukrainian army and government. We do not hear anything about peace negotiations. Instead, EU leaders will meet here next Thursday to agree on more funding for Ukraine's army. On the same day, the European Central Bank will announce interest rates are to go up further. Critics say that priorities are all wrong. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
On Saturday, a string of anti-system parties labeled by the Italian media as the forces of dissent gathered in Rome to discuss the challenges being faced by Italy and the EU and future strategies. The meeting was attended by political groups including More Sovereign and Popular Italy, Reclaim Italy, an alternative, formations advocating for the protection of Italy's sovereign interests and for shielding a growing number of Italians who are paying a heavy toll to what they call a dictatorship of neoliberalism.
In short, we are under a dictatorship, a regime that has stripped us all of dignity, rights. We can't get decent jobs anymore. Our constitution has been vilified. Our youngest generations have been taught the wrong values.
Independent journalists and geopolitical analysts also attended the meeting. They slammed the EU for its vulnerability to corruption and NATO for its belligerent posture. They also argued that the energy crisis was purposely triggered to favor the energy giants and their shareholders.
NATO is primarily responsible for what's happening in Ukraine. A long-planned operation, which has also involved the U.S. Secret Services since the 2014 coup in Ukraine. We believe nations should reclaim their sovereignty and be free to strengthen ties with any country they want.
This affection for politics is running wild in Italy. The turnout for last September's general elections was about 64%, the lowest ever recorded, 9% down compared to the 2018 vote.
Our party was boycotted when we ran in the elections last September. The Italian media simply ignored us. Furthermore, about 4 out of 10 Italians did not vote, meaning that the current parliament only partially represents the will of the people.
Following the outcome of Italy's latest elections held in September, which saw a right-wing coalition led by Giorgia Meloni emerging as winners, all anti-system parties have remained out of the parliament. The once anti-establishment five-star movement managed to garner 18% of the votes, but its action in the parliament seemed to have lost both power and potential now that the party has moved towards more moderate stances. Max Civili, Rome.
Since the riots began in September, anti-Iran media has been depicting the situation as a violent crackdown on so-called peaceful protesters. For the past 2 months, they have been running a propaganda campaign to further pressure Iran under the pretext of violating human rights. But are these peaceful protesters? Iran's intelligence ministry has recently reported the confiscation of a huge cache of weapons and equipment used by terrorists. In fact, Iranian security forces have thwarted several arms smuggling operations and dismantled a number of operational cells affiliated with the terrorist organizations such as MKO. This comes as the illegal influx of weapons into the country is on the rise recently. The confiscated weapons were supposed to be transferred to Iran to be used in the recent riots. Last month, in an interview with the Persian service of the British state-funded broadcaster BBC, former White House National Security Advisor John Bolton said the, quote, Iranian opposition is now being armed with weapons. Bolton added that these arms are being smuggled into the country from the Iraq's Kurdistan region, praising the use of force against Iran's security forces. The recent foreign-backed riots in Iran have claimed hundreds of lives belonging to both security forces and ordinary people. In addition, by conducting acts of vandalism, violence, and insecurity, rioters have paved the way for separatist and terrorist groups to infiltrate the country and carry out brutal attacks against innocent people.
Smuggling huge amounts of weapons into Iran to be used in the recent foreign-backed unrest is merely aimed at undermining the country's security. But Iranian officials have time and again stated that Iran's security is a red line that no one is allowed to cross. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Lebanon has arrested 185 people suspected of working for the Israeli spy agency since October 2019, when the Arab country's